The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goertz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this December 9th, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, and you got me for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. Hope you are staying dry, staying warm. It is a nasty day outside. One of those days where you just want to stay home. You want to stay in your pajamas. You want to stay in the bed. You want to watch your favorite show or maybe try to keep up with the transfer portal. I mean, it seems like it's nearly impossible to keep up with whatever that is. And so we're going to do our best to talk about that today. Plus, we've got the conference championship games to recap. We have an official college football playoff bracket. We also have an updated AP poll in college basketball in what is a slower week for the sport with finals going on and things like that. And so all of that and more here on the show today. And I say we because this guy's back in the studio with us every Monday and Friday. Missed him on Friday, but he's back on Monday. He's wild. He's crazy. He's your favorite Uncle Tebow. My man, good to see you. Happy Monday.
Yeah, good to be seen. Hard to believe we're this deep already into December and Christmas is right around the corner.
I know it.
Christmas came early, though, for a few college football teams this past weekend, and the Grinch came for a few others, Jacob.
So darn. We'll
get all into that and so much more for the next 2 hours. Give us a call, 321-1390. Jacob, I don't know where to begin. There's almost too much sports to talk about. We got the college football playoffs. We had the championship games. We got the bowls now set. We got college basketball. We got transfer portal galore. I mean, good luck keeping up with that, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, for anybody that is in that world that, look, we keep up with it the best we can to talk about it on the air, but we do try to hone it in to Auburn in particular, of course, and I guess SEC too. But for those that are out there that keep up with it, just for anybody that enters and where they're visiting and who they're talking to and where they're going, I mean, it's a full-on job. I mean, it's a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week job for the next 3 weeks because not only those 3 weeks, right, it officially opened today, 6 a.m. this morning in local time, wherever you were, and it's open for the next 3 weeks. But there's also some caveats to that because you've got the playoff teams, right? You can enter, I believe it's up to 5 days after your season ends. If you're a playoff team, you also, if your coach is fired or leaves for another job, you have 30 days to enter the portal after that. And so while you do have set days, there are some exclusions to those rules. And so it extends much further than this 3 week period. And we are going to talk about the portal. We're going to talk about what Auburn has lost, what Auburn is seeking, what Auburn needs, all of that stuff later on in the show today. But I think it is appropriate for us to start with what happened in college football this past weekend with the conference championship games that then led to the bracket for the college football playoff. You had Oregon beat Penn State in the Big Ten championship game. I'm going to eat my words right now. I said Oregon was going to drag Penn State. I said it all week, and Penn State, for maybe the first time all year, showed up and actually looked like a legitimate football team, and I think that's maybe why you saw them get a favorable draw, which we'll talk about, but I think Oregon still proved why they're the number one team in college football, and they win the Big Ten championship game.
Yeah, Penn State got a heck of a good draw. I don't really see many problems with the college football playoff bracket the way it's set up, except for I believe Penn State and Ohio State should have been swapped there. You know, listen, they both lost to Oregon, and Ohio State did have that ugly loss to Michigan. You could kind of chalk that one up to rivalry emotion, but Ohio State beat Penn State. But as we saw, I think a lot of the head-to-head stuff was pretty much thrown out the window with selecting the teams for the bracket. But Penn State gets a very favorable Saturday 12-21 high noon in Happy Valley hosting SMU. Don't sleep on those Mustangs, though. They showed me something late in that game against Clemson, and they can explode on you if you're not used to playing that type of offense.
And the winner of that gets Boise State, who on Friday night won the Mountain West Championship. And so what a crazy world that we live in where Boise State is the third seed in the college football playoff, a first-round bye. They await the winner of SMU and Penn State.
A lot of discussion on Boise State and Arizona State being 3-4.
Sure.
The way the rules are set up for 25 and 26 in the contract that was signed, the top four conference champions got the from each Power Four conference got the bye. I have a problem with that. I do not have a problem with some people telling me that even some conference champions shouldn't even get in. Why even have a conference championship game except for outright money at that point, and then you would refuse to play it if you were already in. So conference champions, I believe there's a place for them. And the people who get in there and play, if all things are about equal, because you shouldn't be penalized for having to go play an extra game while everybody else is at home eating Cheerios, sitting and looking at the Christmas lights.
Which was the entire conversation around the ACC championship game that took place on Saturday night. Before that, though, Arizona State dominated Iowa State 45-19, which is why you see Arizona State seeding. And Clemson and SMU, we'll get to the SEC championship in just a second. Mm-hmm. Clemson and SMU on Saturday night. Clemson dominated this game, dominated for most of the time. 17-point lead, walking into the fourth quarter. Everybody said this was the only scenario that SMU could not afford, right? If they had won or lose close, then they were fine. But walking into the fourth quarter, we're thinking, even if Clemson wins, this is going to knock SMU out. You can't have a no-show in the conference championship game. And then they turned it on, and they scored 17 points in that fourth quarter, and it took a walk-off field goal by Clemson to get this thing done 34-31. For Auburn fans, this was the perfect scenario because it did, in fact, keep Alabama out of the college football playoff in Kalen DeBoer's first year.
Real quick, getting back to Boise State, I know it's crazy to see them as a number three seed, but I watched them Friday night, and let me tell you what, that game will be, what, on New Year's Day? How cold will it be in Boise, Idaho, when they host the winner of SMU Penn State?
Well, that game will be a neutral site, so that won't be.
Oh,
that won't be.
Okay. Well,
so those four
I
teams,
corrected.
So Oregon, Georgia, Boise, and Arizona State do not get to play home games. Those
gotcha.
Will be neutral site bowl games. That is going to be the Fiesta
like
Bowl,
I
believe.
Like it, then. Okay. Well, then they'll be fine. Penn State will probably take care of business. Boise State's a pretty dang good football team, though. I watched them Friday night. And they did some damage to UNLV. Back to Clemson and SMU. Jacob, you said it. It was turn out the lights. The party's over on the Mustangs. They were just getting pushed around, smoked, and they got it together and showed what they could do. Kudos to Dabo Swinney and Clemson for sneaking into that game and being, I believe, the only team with three losses that got into the college football playoff, taking care of business. One heck of a football game. I watched that entire second half. Didn't get to see much of Penn State and Oregon because of it, but it was such a good football game to watch. It was exciting. It's everything that a conference championship or bowl game or playoff game or whatever you want to call it should be. And both of those teams at the end were deemed by the committee to be worthy enough to get into the college football playoffs. Obviously, with Clemson winning, they automatically punched their ticket. SMU, how could you, the way they came back and did what they did and showed what they could do, how could you, with a straight face, Jacob, hold them out of the college football playoffs? And listen, I know this is an Auburn show and it's going to kind of come off as homerism. Both Alabama and SMU deserve to be in the college football playoffs. One of them had to sit out. That's just all there is to it. And after last year when Alabama leapfrogged Florida State to get into the college football playoffs, although they deserved it, but Florida State deserved to be in too, although they had the injury to the quarterback. I think that Paul Feinbaum said it best, and I don't like quoting him very much because I know what he said about Auburn throughout his history. But he said the committee took the easy way out, and they did.
They absolutely did.
Because it was either going to be you got the whole college football world fired up at us, or you got the Alabama fan base fired up at us. Which one are we going to pick this go-around after Alabama got in last year and Florida State got left out, more importantly? It's going to look like complete rigged system, whether it's right or wrong, if we let Alabama slide in after they're sitting at home and SMU just fought for their lives in a conference championship game, even though they lost the game, still having a better overall record than Alabama. I know the strength of schedule is a huge part of it, and the SEC is the best conference, in my opinion. But guess what? The best conference got three people in, the ACC got two, and the Big 12 got one, along with the Big 10 that got three. So there's your respect to the conference shown by the committee. It was I believe in all the times they've ever had to make a decision outside of Auburn and Oklahoma in 2004, and I still think that was rigged to begin with anyway. This was the toughest decision that any of these football committees in the BCS since 1998 have ever had to make.
But I do think it was the right decision based off of the rules that they wrote and the standards that they were trying to set, right? Because the whole narrative was, if SMU loses and you drop them out and do not put them in the playoff, people were saying, us included, we've been saying it a lot longer than most people on this particular program, that conference championship games would then be dead. They would be done right then and there. And so, in a nutshell, the committee kept conference championships relevant by putting SMU in there.
They did.
Now, I totally understand the argument. I totally understand the argument of teams that are saying it's time for us to schedule weaker non-conference opponents. That's fine. And I don't think Alabama's the only one that they're talking about here, but those fans and the people that cover them seem to be the loudest. And we'd love to hear from you. Phone lines aren't open just yet, but you can shoot us a text, 334-784-1067. Tell me a team that did not make the college football playoff because of their non-conference losses. Is there a team that did not make it because of their non-conference losses? I don't think there is. I don't think there is one. Look at the latest playoff rankings that they released yesterday for the college football playoff. Did Alabama not make it because of their non-conference losses? No.
No.
They didn't. Did Ole Miss not make it because of their non-conference losses? No. Did Miami? No. South Carolina? No. BYU? No. These teams lost in conference play. And so I get the argument of, well, let's just schedule the Mercers and the Alabama States of the world and not worry about playing USC or Oregon or California or whoever in non-conference play for fun. Totally understand where that argument comes from. But folks like Alabama fans and Ole Miss fans and Miami fans, you can't be upset when you lose to 6-6 Oklahoma and you let the second worst team in Kentucky come to Oxford and beat you in your house. I'm sorry, you have no excuse. You don't. You have no excuse and you have no argument in my book.
Well, out of the two teams that were really up for grabs there for the last spot, Alabama and SMU, which one played the tougher non-conference schedule? I mean, take a serious look at it, and on paper you'd say, oh, it's Alabama. Well, South Florida was no good this year. Western Kentucky did make their conference championship, but they were putrid. Wisconsin was no good, and their starting quarterback went out in that game early, mm-hmm. like on their first drive. Yeah. SMU played BYU and TCU in non-conference.
Yeah.
Those are solid football teams.
That's a BYU team that was a playoff team for most of the year.
And so that might have been what saved SMU, was they actually played a little bit tougher non-conference schedule than what people thought. Now, conference-wise, it's not even close. I mean, Alabama schedule, and that's why I'm with you. I don't understand why, well, I guess we're just going to have to start scheduling the Sisters of the Poor non-conference. Well, I mean, like you said, what team got left out because they lost a non-conference game. If it was anybody, it was about to be SMU because they lost to BYU.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody might have any kind of argument, it's BYU who has the same amount of losses as SMU, right? And they beat them head-to-head.
Wasn't Miami. They went 4-0 in non-conference play. They lost their two games to Georgia Tech and Syracuse, two teams that are mediocre in the ACC. So I don't understand that argument. Rather than let's just protect ourselves and make sure we don't fall into that category of being left out because of our non-conference losses. That's the only thing I can come up with.
I think the main thing is what you just said earlier. They did not want to deem conference championship games yet defunct.
Not yet.
Not yet. They didn't want to do that just yet because they got a whole nother year of this same system. Mm-hmm. And it's going to change. Everybody knows it. And they're going to go to 16. And I don't have a problem if they go to the four automatic SEC and Big Ten. They're the best conferences year in, year out. Everybody knows it. And then you figure it out from there. You know, they're talking about going 4-4, 2-2. And then that leaves the one outlier like Boise State. So there's 13 spots and you got three other spots that are up for grabs. I don't have a problem with that. But that's not where we're at right now. The committee, with the hands that they were dealt, had to pick SMU. They had to do it. And had they not, my theory comes in then, along with yours, that A, they would have made conference championships. I don't know what you want to call it, an albatross around a team's neck to have to go play it.
Mm-hmm.
And B, the conspiracy theorists would have gone insane when you got Nick Saban on ESPN, getting paid by ESPN, mind you, and paid as an employee at the University of Alabama. Talk about a conflict of interest. And then Reese Davis, and then Greg McElroy, and then all the people at the SEC Network, which is affiliated with ESPN. They're all Alabama-based. College football fans would have lost it. They would have lost it. They'd have just started calling it the Alabama Invitational.
Yeah.
And, you know, listen, you say Auburn fans, that's the best case scenario, what happened for Auburn fans. I guess. I mean, I'm not worried whether they make it or not. I'm worried about Auburn. But it was the worst case scenario for Alabama fans, how it played out.
No doubt about it. And before we get to break, I have to own up to it and say, now that I've seen the committee not put them in, I'll give them a little bit more credit, because I said all year, until I see them not put Alabama in, they're always in it. And coming to Sunday morning, Alabama was still a threat to make it. They were the betting favorite to make it until early Sunday morning when people in Vegas started to get word. Heck, it was reported 45 minutes before ESPN announced it that Alabama was not making the college football playoff.
Brett McMurphy breaking that story. I saw that as well.
Good for him, by the way.
Jerry Palm, though, at the same organization, CBSSports.com, had Alabama in all day, even up until the announcement.
Well, he was wrong.
And he was wrong again, like he normally is.
We'll talk about the bracket when we come back. Talk about who got hosed, who's got a walk to the championship, all that coming up. Here's we're just underway on the Monday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line. On ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
We continue on here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Uncle T-Bone. I'm Jacob Goins. You can shoot us a text with your thoughts on the college football playoff, 334-784-1067. We'll open up the phone lines coming up in just a little bit. We'll also have Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network join us in hour number two. Get a recap on everything going on in Auburn athletics with Auburn basketball. They got a big win over Richmond yesterday, right before the Auburn Downtown Christmas Parade. And so we'll talk about that. Auburn women's basketball, a new soccer coach has been announced. So a lot to catch up on with Jacob Hillman coming up in just a little bit. That'll be an hour number two. And based off of the conference championship games and based off of the rankings and everything that happened, we have our first official 12-team college football playoff, right? Oregon, the number one seed out of the Big Ten. Georgia, I think we need to mention that. I think we had not gotten to the SEC championship game yet. What a great game that was, where
sure
they played against Texas. And I cannot believe that that was the first time ever the SEC championship game had gone to overtime. Like, think about all the close games that have happened in that building in the SEC championship in however many years. I mean, that's insane to think about. That was the first time it went to overtime. And with everything going on in the news right now about Carson Beck, who went down with an injury, you had to bring in the backup who looked really, really good for an offense that couldn't move the football with Carson Beck. And early reports are Carson Beck's elbow is not in good shape. And there's a chance that he could miss out several weeks, including the Sugar Bowl, the game that they're playing in the college football playoff in round 2.
Yeah, I'd be surprised to see him again this season.
I mean, it's the same type of injury that a pitcher gets in baseball where they eventually go on to get Tommy John surgery. Not saying that's what he's got.
So Texas is one-dimensional. I mean, they're just completely one-dimensional.
I agree.
And they got exposed to be one-dimensional for the second time this season against Georgia, who their defensive line dominated Texas up front when Texas would try to run the ball. And some of these run schemes were taking too long to develop from – it was like the quarterback for Texas would take the ball – do almost this fake pass almost thing and stall for just a second to try and stop the Georgia defense. They were coming downhill, and then the running back would get the ball from the quarterback, and the defenders for Georgia and that defensive line in front seven would be all over them.
Yep.
And push them around all night long. Very interesting comments from both coaches at halftime and after the game. Steve Sarkisian asked at halftime, "Coach, you've had 8 penalties, how are you going to clean that up in the second half?" And he, quote, "How about they call, are they going to call a hold on them tonight?"
And that was it.
And then they went to break. And they went to somewhere else.
Yeah, they went over to Kirby.
I have to say, although they showed several times the penalties on Texas in the first half, and many of them were blatant and should have been called as penalties, that was a one-sided affair on penalties being called in the first half. Now, is there a conspiracy here? It's Atlanta. That's Dogtown. Whatever. I don't think so.
Put on the tin hat. Here we go.
I don't think so. But, you know, it was a little one-sided on the holding calls early in that game. And then Kirby Smart goes in on Greg Sankey basically post-game with some comments about their scheduling and how all that played out.
How about that?
And you know what? Good for him. Because I don't like Greg Sankey. I think he's
you're not a Greg Sankey guy?
No, Jacob. I think he is. I think he's up to no good all the time.
Wow.
I don't like him. I just don't like the guy, and I think he's kind of weak. And I think that's another reason why the SEC didn't get 4 in. And I think he's just a politician. And they loaded. Now listen, Georgia's had the benefit for years of being in the Eastern Division that was very down. In a schedule that was much easier, especially late in the season, then they would they finished up their season in SEC play with 2 weeks to go.
Mm-hmm.
Must be nice. While Alabama was traveling out to Oklahoma, and Auburn was hosting Texas A&M, you know, and Florida was hosting Ole Miss, you know, they're playing Mercer or whoever, and Georgia Tech, which is much better, but still. So I don't have a lot of. Sympathy for Georgia here, but they had a brutal schedule.
They did for the first time in a long time.
So welcome to our world, Georgia, because we always have a brutal schedule.
Yeah, his comments towards Greg Sankey.
What did he say?
We're looking forward to having a break and a week off after this schedule that Greg Sankey sent us on this year. Like, that, I don't know. That just doesn't seem like the place to say something like that. I mean, what good does that do?
None.
You know what I mean? Like, your boss, I guess not your boss, but kind of.
Maybe this has something, maybe there's other stuff that this is just, and that was kind of the breaking point with Georgia
maybe.
And SEC. I don't know. You know, there's no way, but, you know, Kirby is asserting himself as the dominant spokesperson of coaches in this league, with Nick Saban now gone to ESPN and being the president and CEO of Alabama football.
And you think his comments did that?
I think that's what he's where he's going. I mean, you know, who's the best coach in the league?
Kirby Smart.
All right.
Well, there you
go. Case closed.
30 minutes in to hour number 1. When we come back, we're going to open up the phone lines. We're going to talk transfer portal. who is left from Auburn and who can Auburn go after. We'll do our best to keep you up to date and refreshed, but I recommend doing your own research, man. There's a lot going on out there. We're talking transfer portal when we come back.
You are on the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Monday edition of On the Line. He is Uncle T-Bone. I'm Jacob Goetz. We appreciate you being with us on this rainy, chilly, nasty Monday afternoon in the Auburn Opelika area. Phone lines are open. Give us a call. What's on your mind? We want to hear from you for the first time today. 334-321-1390. You can always shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. And Uncle T, now with the regular season done and the conference championship games are over, we have a bowl schedule, which if people find relevance in that, cool. I don't. I think they're pointless. I haven't always thought that, but I'm thinking that more and more, and unfortunately it is that motto of if you're not in, you're out type of thing, but that's what ESPN and the college football playoff and everything has decided to make it. And so in this time, though, you've got a bowl schedule, you've got the playoff schedule, transfer portal opened up today, the coaching carousel is wide open. I mean, this is a busy, busy time in the college football season, in the college football schedule, really.
Yeah, I mean, coaching searches, Bill Belichick talking to North Carolina may actually occur. I mean, Jacob, have they ever thought about hiring a coach there not on Social Security? I mean,
I think him and Mac are about the same age. They're low 70s.
Oh, Mac's, I believe he's over 80.
No, he's not 80. No way.
What do they call that, an octogenarian?
I think he's like 72, 73. I think that's what Bill Belichick is, too. Let me know, and then we'll get to the phone
lines. He's 73 years old.
Okay, and I think Bill Belichick's right. But you're right. I mean,
we'll see how old Bill Belichick is.
And for Bill Belichick, too, he had some comments today. He was like, I'm going to come in there and make it an NFL organization.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, we've heard that before.
Bill Belichick, 72 years old.
Okay.
Listen, that's a great get press-wise for North Carolina, and I'm not going to underestimate anybody taking a job and what they can do. But, you know, listen, man, it's a lot different in college compared to pro, and that's why Nick Saban came back from the pros, because he had zero control, basically, over player personnel in the NFL. And now, maybe this is a good fit with the way things are, NIL and free agency in college football, and you basically have zero control over player personnel.
Could be. 334-321-1390. Let's get to the phone lines. You're on the line. Who are we speaking with?
Hey, this is Huckleberry.
What's up, man? What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to, first of all, let you know that I've known Uncle T-Bone for a long, long time. He knows who I am. But I just wanted to bring up the playoff system. I've hated it for a long time, and wanted to just suggest what I think is a logical playoff system that takes a lot of the power out of a group of talking heads or ESPN, who basically determines who gets to play in this playoff and who doesn't.
Okay.
A system in which, basically, before you snap a football, you already know what it's going to take, for the most part, to get into the playoff. Personally, I don't even think you need 12 teams, but that's moot point. Probably going to be 16 before it's all said and done. But with 12 teams, and now with a four major conferences, since that's been reduced, it's very similar to what we got. We got to have four conference champions that are in the playoff, and by doing that, your conference championship game means something, and it's actually part of the playoff system, which I think it should be. And then you're going to have a polling system based off the old BCS type system. It could be a coaches poll, a media poll, and a computer poll that we know up front what are the variables that makes that computer poll what it is? It's not some ambiguous stuff that could be swayed.
There's a hard formula.
A hard formula based on head-to-head competition, wins, losses, offensive stats, defensive stats.
Sure.
That basically gets you a ranking system of your teams. And now you take number 5 through 12 that's in that polling system of those three polls, and they're going to play an extra game, 5 and 12, 6 and 11, and so on. And the winners of those games will play the four conference championships that are going to be ranked 1 through 4, and very similar like how they do it now. And that's your 8 teams that are ends up in the playoffs. And now if you win your conference championship, you're in, and you don't have to play that extra game. But if you lose and you're still one of those 12 teams, you've got to play another game to get back in.
Hmm. Yeah, it's very similar. It sounds like it sounds very similar, not exactly, but very similar to the NFL model, right? Where when you start
that's
the season,
exactly right.
Game one, week one, you know what you have to do. You have to win your games. You have to win the more important games against your division and things like that. And that's what I've kind of talked about, not to the extent that you just laid out, but there has to be something like that. The fact that, and this has been my argument, the fact that we have a group of individuals that have ties to schools involved in the playoff,
yep,
that sit in a room together and watch the games and high-five each other and you know, drink beers together, and then they make a decision and they send one pawn out there to defend it and everybody else goes home. I don't like that. I don't like that system. And so I think I kind of like where you're going with how you laid it out.
I agree 100%. I hate it. I've always hated it. We've seen it as Auburn fans over and over, how the Auburn gets kind of hosed by it and your media favorites or whatever are lifted up. And I've always just liked that. So I agree. It's a system kind of like that, the NFL system, but, you know, it's one in which you know pretty much what it's going to take to get in. And you're not punished for having to play a conference championship game. You're actually rewarded
right
for getting there and winning it. So,
yeah, I like
anyway,
it, Huckleberry. Go ahead.
I was going to say real quick, I got a story on Uncle T-Bone.
Uh-oh. Keep it clean now.
No, this is, like I said, I've known him quite some time. Back when Uncle T-Bone was still in school, he worked for our company. T-Bone, you probably remember this.
Oh, yeah.
And we were doing siding and window replacement work, and T-Bone was assigned on our last day to go around and caulk in all our windows. He was around the back of the house. We're all on the front of the house finishing up, doing final touch-up. And he comes around to the front of the house, says, "I think I got it all done." And he's got caulk all over every one of his fingers, leaves and pine straw stuck to everything that you can imagine. And we're looking at him thinking, oh, my gosh, we don't know what this caulk job's going to look like.
Oh, my gosh.
I appreciate the call, Huckleberry. Don't be a stranger. Yes, that's why I'm no longer in the construction business and
right.
In the communications business. Huckleberry and I go way back. That's a good
That's
man,
funny.
And we really, I truly appreciate his friendship and mentorship throughout my life. It is a true story. I worked for him for 2 or 3 years at least, and had a great time doing so and learned some very good life lessons. Still don't do any caulking, by the way, Huckleberry. Hire a handyman to take care of that for me. Now, Jacob, I like his idea. It makes the championship games very relevant because if you lose, you have to play again.
Or you could be left out it's a situation where you're a 9-3 team.
Right.
And if you win, you're in. But if you lose, then somebody could jump you. Where you could be punished for your conference championship game. But in that situation, that team would not really have the option of declining the invite would not be there. Because more likely than not, that team would have to have that win to get in.
That's right.
If they don't play, then they'd be out. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense. He mentions the four-letter word ESPN and why no hard formula
unless there's a breakaway conference into a true minor league of NFL with 64 teams or so, will ever occur in college football, because just about anybody who's everybody that loves college football was paying attention, if they could, no matter what, to that show yesterday, and the ratings were probably crazy. And the reactionary ratings on the post shows will be just as much today and for at least a week on the team that got left out, with a rabid, passionate fan base in Alabama that won't let it go. And they're going to tune in, and they're going to be loud and proud and be heard. And all ESPN and all the media people there are going to gaslight it. And he mentions, too, the connections on ESPN. And listen, any media person has bias. You love sports. You love a certain sports team, or you wouldn't be involved in this type of work, right? Yeah. But I just, man, it's starting to kind of bother me a little bit. And I love Nick Saban. But if he's going to be an employee at ESPN, how in the world can he be an employee at the University of Alabama as well? Because, listen, I mean, he comes on in a crimson tie saying things like, let me pull it up real quick, sorry. Saying things like, we're Alabama. We, here at Alabama, we are supposed to play Notre Dame, Ohio State, Wisconsin, Florida State in the future outside the league. Those are great games for fans to see, and I think that's what we should be doing. Who is we?
We is Alabama. As soon as he's done on College Game Day every Saturday, he gets on his jet and he flies to Tuscaloosa to watch the game in his box.
Big difference in Kirk Herbstreit being a huge Ohio State fan. He's not paid by Ohio State.
He was very vanilla yesterday, wasn't he? He said, I loved it. He hopped on there and he said, and good for him, he said, I'm not going to say anything. He said, I have no opinion on who makes it or who misses it, because I don't want to have more death threats on my family, which is insane to have to say that.
That's crazy.
Because of Florida State last year.
Well, he went in hard in the paint on Florida State last year.
Yes, he did.
Now, I don't think that anybody deserves any type of death threats.
You went hard in the paint on him.
And he deserved it. I mean, he was so biased. It was ridiculous. Preseason last year, they're on AL.com with articles. I love Nick. I basically worship the ground that Nick Saban walked. When I have family problems, I call Daddy Nick, and he gives me advice. Roll Tide. We never went that far. So, I mean, we all have bias, you know, and they have so much power that they wield. And still, Nick Saban being paid by Alabama and being paid by ESPN at the same time, how in the world – am I supposed to fully trust his opinion to not be biased?
I can't get over the bias of having sitting athletic directors on the committee. I can't get past that.
Yeah, well, that's ridiculous, too, and that shouldn't happen in the NCAA basketball tournament, when it was clear that there was a huge Alabama flavor from both Birmingham and Tuscaloosa that sent Auburn all the way out to Spokane, Washington, after winning the SEC championship.
Yep.
Tell me you can manipulate the system very subtly, but you can also be full-blown biased, but you can really mess somebody up. You can mess your rivals up, and you can paint yourself in a better picture. And if you're being paid to do it and you're not doing it, you should be fired.
We've come full circle from when the BCS era ended, right? Auburn and Florida State played in the very last BCS National Championship. And we got away from that because we felt that the computer systems were starting to fail more and more. And we also felt that there were more teams who were deserving to be and have a chance to have a shot at the national title. But I think we went from one extreme to the other, where we said, to hell with the computers.
Yeah.
Let's bring all these people in here and let them sit in a room by themselves. And let's just open this up to anybody and everybody. And we went from one extreme to, nope, these two teams, because a computer said so, and we don't care what else matters. Nothing else matters. We don't care who else has a shot. And we went from that to what we're doing now. There has to be something in the middle, and it's taken more than a decade for us to finally realize that, and it's going to take even longer to get this thing honed in and really finalized and well-rounded and molded into what really works for all of college football. And until we get there, you're going to have fan bases and organizations that are just upset with the results.
Well, I mean, the powers to be in college athletics, especially football, can kiss my grits. They left an undefeated Auburn team out of the 2004 national title game. Give me a break. We should claim that as a championship. And they did us in 1983 as well, when we had the toughest schedule possibly in the history of the SEC, and got leapfrogged by a Miami team that lost to Florida 38-3, and we beat Florida 28-21. We had the same record. So give me a break. You know, I don't have any sympathy for them. They shouldn't be getting death threats, but we've been done in. We're jaded. We've been done in by them. But let me tell you one thing. If they want to fix this, at least, and you said it, they said, the heck with this, we're just going full human. Well, that's programming. That makes the programming that much more, and that much more they can sell. That's content. That's even more content than some computers. Make the notes transparent. Publish all the notes. You know what I'm saying?
Live stream that thing on
C-SPAN. Live stream it or something, and make them be transparent. There is such a lack of transparency in all these processes going back for years, even into the NCAA basketball selection committee. And then they send one guy out who has to take a beating, and then they all scatter like a covey of quail looking for a place to hide. I don't even know who's on the committee. I don't even know it. They should all have to answer for that, and all of their thoughts should be put out there. That is a non-for-profit, allegedly, organization. And they get to hide? No. Not on Uncle T-Bone's watch, Jacob.
We'll wrap up hour number one when we come back here on ESPN 106.7.
Are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. This is the Monday edition of On the Line on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. And we were going to get to transfer portal stuff, but then Huckleberry had a really good call and got us on the playoff conversation a little bit more. And so want to push that back to the start of hour two so we have plenty of time to get into that, because there's a lot going on the opening day of the transfer portal. But I do think it is important for us to talk a little Auburn basketball, where the Tigers were back in action yesterday after their first loss of the season on Wednesday. I know you haven't had a chance to talk on the air, Uncle T, about Auburn losing their first game of the year against Duke, where they played okay. Well, I'm not going to say they played good, but they played okay. And they still lost by six after getting the short end of the stick, we'll say, against the officiating. But then they bounced back yesterday with a huge, huge win margin-wise over Richmond at home. Not going to say Richmond was a really good team either, but Auburn did what they had to do early yesterday afternoon inside of Neville Arena.
Yeah, there's been some pretty good Richmond teams in the past that have given Auburn fits. I know that. Back to Auburn, Duke. Flashback very quickly, incredible atmosphere. Duke AD has to issue a statement after the game, basically telling Duke season ticket holders, not only did we have to overcome a really good team, we had to overcome a crowd that was almost pro-Auburn, saying, we're going to start taking notes if you're going to keep selling those tickets. I mean, listen, it's a free country, at least for now, and when you have if someone's gone for me a couple of thousand bones for a basketball ticket, I'm probably going to think long and hard about taking it. That being said, the Auburn fan base traveled well. You can't blame them. It's like when Georgia went up to Notre Dame and played in South Bend in football.
Yeah.
And it was a 50-50 crowd. That's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Literally.
Course. And if you've got the ducats and you're that passionate about it, you're going to find a way to get into that arena. And good for Auburn fans. I mean, Auburn basketball is hot. Still ranked number two despite the loss.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's a lot of data left to collect in this season. They're going to the NCAA tournament. How far they go, you know, it's how well they shoot and how much they stay out of foul problems. It's basically about it. I think that Tahad Pettiford should be starting here soon. He is ridiculous. That kid is just an insane baller.
He's a beast. I love Tahad Pettiford.
And listen, when somebody's hot, run with the hot hand. But it's Bruce Pearl's team, and he's going to do what he does. It's proven, and who am I to say differently? But you got to get that guy in there a little bit more. They kept saying he had foul problems and four fouls, and they take him out with 4 minutes left. He doesn't get in until 30 seconds left in the game. Bro, if he fouls out, he fouls out. What if he'd put up 6 points before he fouled out? I don't care if he fouls out. Just get the best guys on the court, especially in crunch time. Real quick, too, one thing that I haven't liked hearing is Auburn fans saying, well, 10 years ago, Uncle T, would you have ever imagined
we'd
have been so competitive against Duke?
I'm so tired of it.
And that they were barely a two-point favorite, and we hung in
there
with
them.
Aren't
we so far past that now?
Can we not have a winning mentality at all times? It's not just good enough to be competitive. Win or die. That's what type of basketball program we have at Auburn now, and you should be dang proud of it.
Tennessee, number one. Auburn, number two. Iowa State, number three. Duke, number four. Kentucky at five. Marquette, six. Bama, seven. Gonzaga, eight. Florida, nine. And Kansas at 10. That is the newest AP poll that came out this week for college basketball. Purdue is at number 11. That's a Purdue team that Auburn plays next week. They've got Ohio State coming up this Saturday in Atlanta at State Farm Arena. Hour number one is in the books. Stick around. A lot more college football transfer portal conversation coming up in hour number two.
Is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goertz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. If you missed any of hour number one, you can catch it with the podcast. You'll find the show posted, just the audio taken for you and put on the website at ESPNAU.com. In hour number one, Uncle T-Bone and I, we talked about the conference championship games that happened this weekend. Also talked a lot about the college football playoff bracket that is now officially finalized from yesterday. And so I talked a lot about that and the system and how the teams got there and why they got there and the teams that didn't make it, all that. So that's going to be an ongoing conversation. But had our initial thoughts on that at hour number one. So be sure that if you missed any of that, you can listen to that later on today at ESPNAU.com. Coming up here in hour number two, Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network is going to join us in about 30 minutes. We're going to get caught up on a lot of things happening around Auburn athletics as the football season is officially over, as the portal has opened up today. Also, talk about Auburn basketball, men and women, and plus all the other updates around athletics as well. And we're also about to talk about the transfer portal as it is officially open today. And it has been insane. Now, we've seen a lot of announcements, right, about guys who have intended on entering the portal and planned on entering the portal and yada, yada, yada. But today, everything is official, right? It opened up 6 a.m. local time today. And so, if you have tried to keep up with it, I praise you. I do, because it has been insane to try and keep up with the guys that have entered, the ones who have already said they've been reached out to, the ones who have already scheduled visits, and that's what we're talking about here in hour number two. You can give us a call, 334-321-1390. You can also shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box. That number is 334-784-1067. And before we get to content, want to remind you that hour score number two. Each and every day here on ESPN during On the Line is brought to you by our friends in the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them sponsoring the second hour of my show each and every day here on ESPN. Let's talk about the transfer portal, Uncle T, because today is when it all gets started. Anybody can enter. They can all submit their name. They can start being reached out to. They can start scheduling visits. And Auburn has been very active on both sides of those things. Big-time names have started to enter the transfer portal. Any that have caught your eye so far for Auburn that have entered the transfer portal?
Well, I mean, Hank Brown's the biggest name, right?
I would say so.
I mean, you know, someone who started a game at quarterback for Auburn this season, and some people wanted to see more of him. He's out. That kind of leads me to believe that Auburn's not just going to bring one transfer portal quarterback in, but probably two, don't you think?
It's what it seems like.
I mean, who do they got left? Walker White and Deuce Knight?
Yeah, Walker White, Deuce Knight. Yeah, you got Holden that's in there.
No, he's gone, or right?
Well,
I think he's out, too.
Hank Brown was the big one that decided to – and remember, there were reports on Hank late last week that became false. Those were then debunked by Hank Brown himself, and then just a couple of days later, he decided to enter the transfer portal. But he has officially entered, that is of today, for Auburn. He will be leaving and moving on somewhere else.
Yeah, T.J. Lindsey's in there. I hate to see that. Mm-hmm. I thought that he was a pretty decent recruit that Auburn got late last recruiting cycle. I believe he was here for the spring, too, and was an early spring arrival. And went. That seems like someone you put some pretty good amount of time into. Auburn's defensive front's going to continue to be a work in progress. I mean, they signed three guys who are fantastic. I don't know if you saw Jordan Crawford in the game he had in the state championship game for Parker, but he absolutely dominated in that game against Spanish Fort. I mean, he is a beast, and he will play early at Auburn. If he doesn't, it'll be a mistake by Auburn, unless he just lets himself go before he gets here, and I don't think that's going to happen. That guy's got a motor. But, you know, other than that, I hate to see Cam Brown go. I just feel like there's some potential there that never was quite realized here at Auburn. Former four-star out of Florida that picked Auburn over Pitt on signing day. I believe that he might have been one of the last of the holdovers, though, from the Brian Harsin era. Other than that, you know, there's some names in there, and you're just like, all right, well, whatever.
As of today, Holden Gurner, Mike O'Reilly, the tight end, E.J. Harris on the offensive line, Grant Hidalgo, a tight end, has entered at 6'5". Gage Keys off the defensive line entered as well. These are about of a week ago or so.
Yeah, he came in from Kansas last year in the transfer portal. I've seen some reports that he's going back.
Jeez. What a world. What a world we live in. Gabe Russo, the punter. So Auburn's more than likely going to have to go get one of those since you've got the current punter who will be graduating for Auburn. You have Camden Brown. That was really the first bigger domino to fall. Just one of the bigger names, right, that Auburn was losing out of that receiver room. You mentioned T.J. Lindsey off the edge. This one over the weekend was one that kind of surprised me, and I think Christian and I may have talked about it on Friday. Can't quite remember that far. Caleb Wooden, the safety for Auburn out of that secondary, a guy that's been at Auburn and seen a lot at Auburn, but his time here is done.
He'll enter the portal. That he tried to enter or did enter the portal last year at some point, but they talked him out of it and he stayed, and that at that time he was looking to go to Colorado, if I remember correctly. He's someone that's seen a lot of minutes at Auburn and seen a lot. But listen, this is why if you're going to put a massive emphasis on high school football recruiting, you got to hit on these guys and you got to get them out there playing early. There is no more, well, just come in for a couple of years and develop, and because they can go to any school early and get paid probably a little bit of coin, go develop there, and they can come back I mean, you're seeing that with Gage Keats, allegedly. But you've got to go ahead and get the young guys out there. I'm sorry. The days of trying to redshirt folks, unless they just full-on say, I want to be redshirted, and you know they're not leaving.
Or have injuries.
Or they have injuries. Good point. You got to play your young guys now.
But I think a lot of these guys are good enough to play now, too. I think that's the difference. I think, look at what Auburn did defensively. They were the youngest team in college football, and look how good they were. They kept Auburn in every single game this season.
Would you rather be 6-6 with a bunch of older dudes or 6-6 with a bunch of younger dudes?
Yeah, the latter.
And so you got to get these guys on the field. And you're going to have to recruit them every year, and you're probably going to have to renegotiate every year. Something's going to give eventually. I'm not in for government intervention. I think that's a joke. I think what you're going to have is more committees trying to figure stuff out. Eventually, the NCAA or whatever organization that's going to run college football is going to have to man up and make rules, and if you want to fight it, let's go to court.
Another one that entered over the weekend that was a – I'm not going to say it hurt at this point. I just think the potential and lack thereof. I guess this one just never came to fruition for Auburn. Caleb Burton, the wide receiver who transferred in from Ohio State. And the expectation with this kid was we don't know a whole lot about him. He was very raw, had almost nothing proven from Ohio State. But the narrative around him was he's coming out of the receiver room at Ohio State. He can't be bad. Right?
Right.
He's was in the room at Ohio State.
And ain't no way Ohio State would have somebody who can't play, right?
Right, exactly. And I think Caleb Burton could be good. I just think he never took that next step, and then he got passed. And it is what it is, man. So he's in the transfer portal. Of course, the news of Hank Brown in the transfer portal. And then today, this name's been floating around, a guy that transferred from Alabama to Auburn, and is now leaving Auburn to go somewhere else. Antonio Kite, the four-star corner, is in the transfer portal as well. So those are the names. You're starting to see them get a little bit bigger, Uncle T, as it's officially open today. But call me crazy, I don't think Auburn has lost anything. Not been one that's just like, shot through the heart, right? I mean, and nothing against any of these guys. They have potential to be good. Hank Brown could have been good. I just don't think got the fairest shake in the world, and I wish him nothing but the best along with all these other guys. But this isn't a DeMarcus Riddick or a Cam Coleman or something like that. I mean, this isn't a big name or a Perry Thompson that's decided to enter the portal at this point, and we still don't know who all else is going to enter. This is just day one. But for Auburn, you mentioned the quarterback spot with Hank Brown, and with him and Holden deciding to leave, that does open it up for Auburn to go get two quarterbacks in the transfer portal.
One of the big names floating around right now is the quarterback from Stanford. I can't remember his first name. Daniels is his last name. He's from Buford, Georgia, 6'2", 215-pound kid. Big, strong arm. Not sure what his status is classification-wise, junior, senior, whatever. I would imagine Auburn going and getting somebody around a sophomore-ish or redshirt freshman-ish. And then someone who's a senior who can play and that you can trust immediately, and they're going to have a big old competition. I'm hoping Deuce Knight comes in this spring. If someone can answer that question for me, that'd be great if he plans on being here this spring, because if he can and he's even close to as good as any of these guys, just play him.
You're talking Ashton Daniels from Stanford. He has 1 year of eligibility remaining, a guy that has had an up-and-down career at Stanford. I think he's more of a guy that you bring in – because, look, it's really hard nowadays. It's really, really hard to bring in somebody and basically look them in the eye and say, hey, we're bringing you in as number two. And I think that's what Ashton Daniels would be. I don't think he's starting caliber at Auburn. I just don't. But I do think you could bring him in because of his local ties being in Buford, right, just next door, a guy that is dual threat and somebody that has shown flashes of being talented. I just don't think the consistency is there. If you can sell that to him, great, that's fine. But Ashton Daniels is not the future of Auburn football.
Yeah,
I don't
think that's the one that's going to move the needle for me to get us over the top. 2023, while at Stanford, he had a 58% passing completion percentage, 2,200 yards, 11 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. Ugh.
2024, 63%, at least his completion percentage improved a little bit. 1,700 yards, 10 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. I mean, come on, man. Really? This is who we're supposed to be getting hot and bothered about? Going to be the next Cam Ward? I mean, I'm just going to not believe in any of these guys, to be honest with you. They've pulled the wool over my eyes one too many times, Jacob. And quite honestly, listen, man, this is Hugh Freeze's third recruiting class, third season, third spring, and will be his third portal class. This is fully his program now. No more excuses. Just start winning some games, baby. That's all I got to say about that. But if you're looking for Ashton Daniels from Stanford, and that's going to be our number one, Jacob, that dog's not going to hunt. I'm sorry. I ain't going to buy into that. And really and truly, how many people has Auburn truly hit on in the portal? I mean, Peyton Thorne's got a gob of stats. Won 11 games. Well, he's quarterback in 2 years. You know, KLS was a hit. Rivaldo Fairweather was kind of a hit. The Mousy kid this year did a pretty good job becoming a starting linebacker. Keys was not a hit. I don't even know if he's coming back next year. Is he gone finally? I mean, who's been – I mean, Jaron Thompson, out of the – how many portal guys that have come in? 60? You're hitting on maybe 10%. Ooh. So I'm supposed to – I mean, really – think yeah. about it. So I'm supposed to buy that this Stanford quarterback is going to get us over the top? I don't think so.
334-321-1390. Let's get to the phone lines. You're on the line. Who are we speaking with?
This is Dan in Auburn.
What's up, Dan? What's on your mind?
Just trying to stay a little bit dry. A little rainy day here.
I'm telling you, it's nasty outside, man.
Yeah, to answer your question about whether Deuce Knight has or when he's getting in, there was an article that came out, I guess, sometime in the middle of last week. They said, when are the guys coming in? And literally like 25 of like the 27 guys were getting in early.
Good.
And he's one of them. So he will be in here in January.
Thank you for answering that, and that's good news to me, Dan.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I mean, look, maybe that – you know, they keep saying that he's not ready, but yet, I mean, I watch him make some big-time throws. He definitely can throw the ball down the field. And we know that he's a phenomenal athlete. I mean, he can run like the wind. He can jump. I think he broke the long – or he was the winner, like the long jump and the high jump in the state.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the guy's just a phenomenal athlete. So, yeah, is he a little thin at the moment? Yeah, I mean, bring him in real quick, put him in, put 20 pounds on him, and I let him go, you know.
Yeah.
Well, here's a thought, Dan. But, I mean, you got a young quarterback, and maybe he's your best option, and he's not quite, 100% SEC level ready. Run the ball a little bit and take some pressure off of him.
And then not just at the quarterback position, but like you're talking about, hey, we need a senior safety or something like that. But it seemed to me that most of the freshmen we got this year were actually better than the senior players.
Yeah, they played like it down the stretch.
None of the seniors were good. But, and number 18 was great at safety. He was a sure tackler and he did well. And like the two safeties coming in are phenomenal players. I mean, one of them's like a big-time interception ball hawk, and, the other guy can play, all three levels. I mean, those guys just need to get in the rotation, and, by the end of the year, they're probably going to be starters anyway.
You're talking about Anquan Fagans and Eric Winters, mm-hmm. the safety from Thompson and the safety from Enterprise. In my opinion, from what I've seen in Auburn recruiting in my lifetime, maybe the best two safeties that Auburn's signed in a class together. Out of the state of Alabama, for sure. I mean, everybody's recruiting them.
I think Fagans has like 30 interceptions.
Oh, yeah, he's unbelievable. I saw both of them in person, yeah. Colin Auburn High. Those guys can play. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah. All right, appreciate it, guys.
Yep, thanks for the call, man. 334-321-1390. We need to get to break. We'll come back, talk a little more portal, talk some more recruiting things as well before we get Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network in here. Phone lines are open. Give us a call, 334-321-1390.
War Eagle, this is Coach Hugh Freeze, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7.
Back here in the studio on ESPN 106.7, we continue on in hour number two on the Monday edition of On the Line. And just got some news, Uncle T-Bone, via the Twitter world or the X world, whatever you want to say. Georgia has released a statement about Carson Beck, who got hurt in the SEC championship game. We knew and got to see the play of Georgia without their starting quarterback, right? We got to see Gunnar Stockton come in, go 12 of 16 for 71 yards, no touchdowns, threw a pick, but he led a touchdown drive for Georgia and ultimately led them to a victory in the SEC championship game. This statement from Georgia says, quote, Georgia quarterback Carson Beck suffered an elbow injury during Saturday's Southeastern Conference Championship game. He and his family are exploring treatment options, and there is no current timetable for his return. They go on to say about the punter as well, Brent Thorson. But again, Georgia quarterback Carson Beck suffered an elbow injury during Saturday's Southeastern Conference Championship game. He and his family are exploring treatment options, and there is no current timetable for his return. How much does this impact Georgia's national championship odds and chances? Now, they do get the extra week, right, because they don't have to play in the first round. They get the first round bye. They'll be playing in the Sugar Bowl. They get to host that, or they get to wait and see who they play in that. But that's big-time news out of Athens. And we've started to hear those rumblings, and we knew it was pretty bad when it happened on Saturday. Oh, yeah. But for him to be looking into treatment options and no timetable for a return, that doesn't sound too good.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to be seeing Carson Beck in the college football playoffs. I wouldn't be betting on that, would you?
No. I would be willing to say he probably will not touch the field.
Yeah, I mean, that looked like a pretty gruesome. I don't know if it's the word, but it looked very, very awkward the way he was injured and laying on that field on that turf, man. Hey, I'm going to give a shout out to that Gunnar Stockton kid. He came in and they were gritting. Let me say something. I just said we're talking with Dan about the possibility of Deuce Knight coming in the spring. Would he compete, you know, as someone who may not be officially SEC ready as a freshman for the starting quarterback at Auburn? I say if all things are even close to equal, just play the young guys and get it over with. Rip off the Band-Aid is what y'all always say, Jacob, and get going for the future right now. And a good way to alleviate some pressure off a young guy is to establish any type of physical run attack, which for some reason Auburn would establish and then just disestablish from quarter to quarter in games this season. Cost us some football games. That's a fact.
Cost several football games.
Georgia went out there with a backup QB in the second half of that game and absolutely punished Texas.
Pounded it.
And they could, oh, they got seven in the box, Uncle T, or eight, the bus stopped the run no matter what. And Georgia was like, I don't care. Stop it. And they manned up and physically whipped Texas. And you know what? I don't care if you've got Joe Montana back there at quarterback and you're Auburn University. Buddy, in the SEC, you got to physically whip people and get physical. And Kirby Smart continues to do that no matter who the quarterback is and what offense they're running. And he made Texas one-dimensional, and that's why Georgia won that football game.
Listen to these splits in this SEC championship game that Georgia wins 22-19 in overtime, the first ever overtime game in the Southeastern Conference. Listen to these yard differentials and splits, okay? Total yards, Texas 389, Georgia 277. Outgained them by over 100 yards, did the Longhorns.
Stats.
Passing yards, Texas threw for 358. They ran for 31 yards. Georgia, on the other hand, listen to this, passed for 136, and they ran for 141. I'm not good at math, but that's 5 yards difference, man.
Yeah.
They went full on equal, down the middle, and did exactly what they needed to do to win that football game. Texas said, all we can do is throw. That's all we know how to do is throw, and that's all we're going to do is throw. And it didn't work out because they couldn't score. They made Quinn Ewers throw it 46 times.
That sounds familiar.
Against Georgia. Sound familiar? Yeah, it better. He threw for a touchdown and two interceptions.
What was the very last play of the game?
Oh, my gosh.
They stuffed it down Texas' throat on a run play into the end zone. Winner, chicken dinner.
With ETN, who was questionable to play in the game to begin with.
You've got to get this offense at Auburn more consistently physical with a run attack.
Yeah.
I don't care who the quarterback is, and I don't care what your philosophy is, and I don't care who's coaching at Auburn. Over the last 10 years, since really and truly midway through 2014 and then a little bit in 17 when Kerryon Johnson was here, Auburn has just refused to establish a consistent physical run attack. And it's cost them multiple games. And it's costing me gray hair. And I'm tired of it.
I think a guy that caused you gray hair, who's been retired for a couple of years, Uncle T, is now back in the coaching world. Have you seen that news? We got a minute or so before we get to break, and welcome in Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. I know everybody likes when we talk about this guy. Somebody who's still being paid by Auburn. No, not Gus Malzahn. We know he's still coaching, just not as a head coach anymore, going from UCF to be the new offensive coordinator at Florida State. He will not be the only former Auburn coach who is an offensive coordinator in the ACC, mind you. Brian Harsin. He's being paid to not be the head coach at Auburn. He's also now going to be paid to be the offensive coordinator for the Cal Golden Bears. How about that? And Josh Vitale, Josh Vitale, he used to cover Auburn here locally years ago. He tweeted out earlier yesterday or today, and he said, coaching brains are wired so weird. He said, if somebody paid me $15 million to not do my job, you'd never hear from me again. If my boss Steve Witten is out there somewhere, if you pay me $15 million to never speak into a microphone again, I think I'd do it, Uncle T. I think I would probably do it. $15 million, and now probably. He's going to go be the offensive coordinator Cal. Him, an offensive coordinator?
That's just more. What? It's just more Java that I have to deal with in my life. The last two coaches before Hugh Freeze are now offensive coordinators at Florida State and at California. What a bunch of losers.
Let's take a break. We'll come back.
There it is. I said it. And I blame the Board of Trustees still.
Okay. All right. We got to get to break. Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network joins us next. We're recapping football, talking transfer portal, and basketball for men and women. Jacob Hillman joins us coming up next.
With Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He's Uncle T-Bone. I'm Jacob Goins, and we get to the phone lines. Excited to have this guy back on the show. He's with the Auburn Sports Network. He helps make things run smoothly over there. Jacob Hillman, what's up, my man? How are you? Happy Monday.
Happy Monday to you guys as well. Happy to be on as we kind of get into the thick of December and these winter sports as we wrap up the fall as well.
Yeah, I know it's this week until Saturday is a little bit slower since it is finals week over at the university, so no major events going on. They got all the students and the student-athletes still being students, and so getting all of that knocked out. But that does give us a chance, Hillman, to kind of recap and rewind a little bit because there's been a lot that's been happening since really before the Iron Bowl. I mean, with the Iron Bowl and with football season kind of being, I mean, over for Auburn now. Not kind of. It is. It's over for the regular season. And so do the best you can. Summarize what the football season was for Auburn in 24. We talked to Brad about this a couple of weeks ago, but want to get your thoughts as well before we start talking transfer portal. Recap the Auburn football season for us.
Yeah, it was obviously filled with some ups and downs, maybe a few more downs than you would have hoped for this season, but it was nice to end the home slate the way that the Tigers did with that 4-overtime thriller against Texas A&M. And really, those 2 weeks, the ULM game and the Texas A&M game, having to bounce back from the Vanderbilt loss and coming out and being explosive on offense, being able to see guys like Cam Coleman and Jarquez Hunter really continue to play as well as they have all season. And to add on to that, Keandre Lambert-Smith, I think it was back-to-back week that Coleman, Lambert-Smith, and Hunter had 100 yards receiving or rushing. And that's something that just doesn't happen very often in college football, or and it hadn't happened in a long time at Auburn. So it was great to see those performances be had and see a very cool atmosphere at Jordan-Hare Stadium in the final home game of the season. You know, it was a night game. The atmosphere was absolutely unbelievable, and looking forward to it again next season. Obviously, next year you get the Georgia game, you get the Alabama game at home. Tougher road trips next season, but overall, I just thought it was really nice to end the season on a high note at home. Obviously, you didn't, you weren't able to get the win in the Iron Bowl to make yourself bowl eligible, but you were in the game going into half, bad start to the third quarter, and then he kept fighting and didn't let Alabama score after that, after it was 28-7, but had your opportunities in that game, just couldn't capitalize in the red zone.
Jacob, Auburn will open up at Baylor on August 30th, 2025 in football. That's a Baylor Bear team that's won six in a row, found a quarterback, and is red hot, moving into a bowl game, and they're going to probably be ready for Auburn. What is the expectation with that game opening up next year, and what is a reasonable expectation for next year for Auburn football?
Yeah, it's hard to say at this point the expectations for the season, just because we still haven't quite gotten to that that portal season yet. It's kind of starting just now. You're starting to see those names enter the transfer portal and see them connected to different schools. So it's hard to say. You definitely want to win most of your home games and grab a few on the road, because I think last season, and hopefully the schedule shakes out a little bit better than it did this past season. We'll find out on Wednesday, but I don't think starting with five straight home games and then going on the road for an entire month is necessarily the most ideal way to do it. I think it is good to go on the road early on. That really helps with team bonding, and that really helps the team come together and really get to know each other, and that translates to on the field as well. So I hope that the schedule shakes out a little bit better in Auburn's favor. And we find that out on Wednesday. But, yeah, I think starting on the road at Baylor, that's going to be a very interesting matchup. Like you said, Baylor's ending the season as well as it could. And I'm trying just to recall, it's been a while since Auburn's opened its season with a premier opponent like that. I guess it was 2020, the weird COVID season where it was only SEC games being played and Auburn hosted Kentucky. But since then, it's usually been opened up with a lower level program, and now Auburn goes and steps back up to the Big 12 to open its season. That'll be very interesting to see.
Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network joining us on ESPN 106.7. You mentioned the transfer portal. It has opened up officially today. Obviously, we've seen announcements over the last couple of weeks of guys who have intended to enter the portal, but now that it's official today, Auburn, some of the bigger names that have decided to enter, Antonio Kite, the multi-transfer, is in the portal. Hank Brown is in the portal. Camden Brown is in there as well. So some of those bigger names that we've seen Auburn lose to the transfer portal, and with Hank Brown and Holden both being in there, does that tell you that they should go after two quarterbacks in this transfer class?
Yeah, I don't think you have much of a choice. And you need that quarterback depth. It's always important to have three. I think you look at the NFL model where there's three quarterbacks on a roster, but I think in college it's a little bit different. You want to have at least four or so, and then plus your scout team and walk-ons. But yeah, I'm interested to see what other positions are the ones that Auburn targets big time. I think the interior on the defensive line as well as the linebacking position are the ones that Auburn's going to be really heavily involved with. And then I think from there, you're looking at other places to fill in. I think the receiver room could use a veteran presence there. Obviously, you're losing Keandre Lambert-Smith and Robert Lewis because they're running out of eligibility. So, and that also includes Rivaldo Fairweather, the tight end position. So some of your most veteran guys that have been here for a couple of years or have at least played college football for more than just this past season, they're on their way out. And I think having another veteran guy. But if you can have the impact that Keandre Lambert Smith had, and that's the good thing about what he did in this season. No, he didn't get to 1,000 yards, and no, Auburn didn't make it to a bowl game, but he still showed that you can come in and make an immediate impact, and that's very important for the transfer portal. And I'll be interested to see what on the offense, because obviously I think the offensive line is a spot where any team is always looking to improve, and I think Auburn especially is in position to do that. So it'll be very interesting to see what position groups Auburn targets.
Jacob Hillman, Auburn Sports Network. Jacob, Auburn blisters at home Richmond yesterday, 98-54, blowing out the Spiders. Still ranked second in the AP Saturday. I think that game's in Atlanta, right, at State Farm?
It is, yeah,
against Ohio State. Yep. What can we expect from the Buckeyes? And, what's the feel of the Auburn program right now other than just complete confidence?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. It is totally confident around this basketball program, and that goes back to that Maui Invitational and how Auburn handled itself after falling behind 18 points to Iowa State, who is ranked third in the country, right behind Auburn. So that really proves to me that since then Auburn has played with confidence, even with the loss at Duke. The Tigers were right there in it every step of the way. They fell behind by 12 at Cameron Indoor Stadium and still fought their way back. Then obviously bouncing back with really a day and a half to prepare for Richmond and just picked up right where it left off in its home slate, obviously dominating Vermont, Kent State, North Alabama, continuing that trend against the Spiders. And I just think that this team is really finding itself. I thought it was really interesting the minutes that Jakai Howard got yesterday, and after the game, Coach Pearl said Chad Baker Mazzara basically took a step back so that he could get those minutes. And knowing that down the road, Howard and everyone in this rotation is going to have to contribute, and the only way they're going to be able to do that is if they get in the rhythm and they're ready to go. And you have to do that in games like that. So it's very, very good to see those things, as well as I don't know. Jani Broome's the National Player of the Year front runner. I don't know if there's anyone really denying that. I think he's the best player in the country. I would argue Auburn's the best team in the country, but obviously Tennessee's undefeated. You can't deny that, but that is what it is. We don't need to worry about that until we get to March. So Ohio State on Saturday, that's going to be a tough matchup for Auburn. The Buckeyes had a weird start to Big Ten play. They played Maryland on the road, and at halftime, we're down 50-17, and that was not what I think Auburn expected to see out of the Buckeyes in their first Big Ten matchup, but they did bounce back with a win over Rutgers, and Rutgers is a good team with several stud freshmen, Dylan Harper, Ace Bailey, so a 14-point win over the Scarlet Knights is nothing to be, nothing to look past, and I think this Ohio State team will be ready after another week off and getting ready to play Auburn. I've seen reports about Aaron Bradshaw being back with the program, so that's a name to look out for, and I think that Auburn and Atlanta, the big thing about that, it's a pseudo-home game. Similar to when Auburn went to Houston to start the season, and there was a lot of Houston fans there, this game is going to be filled with Auburn witnesses, and it's going to be an exciting time at State Farm Arena.
You mentioned talking about stud freshmen, and you can't do that without talking about the one for Auburn and Tahad Pettiford. I mean, this kid is on another level right now. He's quickly becoming my favorite guard that Auburn maybe has ever had. I mean, he is just that good, and whether he is in that starting rotation or coming off the bench or getting the majority of the minutes, I mean, no matter what the case is, he just continues to deliver big-time shot after big-time shot. Guys like we've seen come through this Auburn program before. What do you think he means to this Auburn team when he's on the floor versus when he's not?
Yeah, it was kind of funny. I think going into yesterday, it almost seemed like Tahad was playing his best in big games, whether it was at Duke, against Iowa State, at Houston. Those were when he shined, and, you know, against in the bye games, against Richmond, against Vermont, he didn't do as much. I mean, I think that Vermont game, he was 0-4. He scored 0 points. That was the season opener. But then he bounced back against Houston and scored 20 and was critical in that come-from-behind win. And then again yesterday, he ties Miles Kelly for the team high in points, and he just looks like he belongs out there. He seems so comfortable, and That's something that a lot of freshmen aren't ready for. But he does it all. He does it, whether it's scoring, passing, or I think his defense can improve. It was interesting. I think after that Duke loss, I was in attendance, and several of the Duke fans around were asking why Pettiford wasn't in the game when it came down to crunch time. Coach Pearl went on to explain in his post game that, you know, they needed defense on the floor, and that's why Denver Jones was out there. And I think that's the one point of emphasis they have with Pettiford, is when we get to SEC play, is that they want his defense to be top-notch so that he can play in those closing and critical minutes. So he's getting there, and that's what's important. But when Auburn's on offense, you can trust him with the basketball, and that's very, very I don't want to say it's rare for a freshman, but it's nice when you know you can give it to him and let him go.
Yeah, I've been very jealous of you, Jacob Hillman. This first time I've gotten to talk to you in the last couple of weeks, because I don't know if Brad Law gave you the day off or Andy Burcham gave you the time off, but you went to Maui, you went to Duke. I mean, where else are you? I'm sure you'll be in Atlanta Saturday. I mean, where else are you going to go to follow this team?
Listen, when this team is as good as it is, you don't want to miss a beat. You don't want to miss a game, a second, or anything like that. So you got to follow them around as much as possible. This is truly one of the most exciting Auburn basketball teams that I've seen in my lifetime. And obviously, I think that goes for a lot of people. And obviously, that Jabari Smith-Walker Kessler year a few years ago was awesome. The Final Four year got exciting towards the end. But I just think this team has something different where from start to finish this season, I think they've got something special building. And yeah, no, I encourage anyone and everyone, if you can't make it to a game at Neville Arena, look at Saturday's game at State Farm Arena, as well as the battle in Birmingham against Purdue the following Saturday. Go to those larger venues that can host Auburn, as well as the visiting games. Go to Athens. Go to Tuscaloosa. Just take a look at those tickets, and that's the way to go see that team.
Yeah, just get on a plane and fly to Maui, folks. It's not that hard. Just go see team play in Hawaii, right, Hillman? Come on.
You can't miss that opportunity.
I did. I missed it. Some of us have to work around here, Jacob. Some of us
to do. I promise there were emails sent. There were radio clips edited in between my ties on the beach.
Jacob, right? I'm going to say this. I was at that game last year. Indiana at Auburn, mm-hmm. and in Auburn, at State Farm. And there were more Indiana fans than Auburn fans there.
There were. I was there too.
And it felt like what I imagine a Final Four or Elite Eight game would feel like pregame inside the arena. I mean, those people flew in, took the MARTA straight over to State Farm, and came in droves. There was a ton of Hoosier Red. Yeah. But it got real quiet when KD Johnson got on the court and went crazy and shut them down. So if you're going to that game, be prepared to get loud and proud. I bet Ohio State's going to bring a crowd.
Yeah, no, I agree. They will. I think that it's one of those things where in the past, these Auburn fans love going to Atlanta, and then you get a matchup like Indiana, who I consider a blue blood adjacent, not a blue blood, but they're right there. I truly think that it brings an extra level to those matchups, and Ohio State has great basketball history as well. So it's going to be an exciting Saturday in Atlanta.
Jacob, before we let you go, tell the people what else is going on around Auburn Athletics. Of course, women's basketball is in action. A new women's soccer coach was introduced today as well. So tell the people what's going on.
Yeah, women's basketball got a big win over UAB, 69-62 yesterday, as a part of the doubleheader with the Richmond game. Only 8 scholarship players were available. So it was a great win, and hopefully everyone can get healthy before the next matchup in 10 days at Louisiana. And then, Auburn soccer. James Armstrong comes in after Coach Karen Hoffa retires after 26 great years as the head coach at Auburn. So when Auburn takes the pitch next August, that'll be the first time that Karen Hoffa is not the coach this century. She's been the coach that long, and James Armstrong's obviously has a great resume coming from Mississippi State. They were undefeated in conference play this past season. He was the SEC Coach of the Year. Their only loss came in the SEC Tournament Championship to Texas. So I think that he's ready to go, and he was a former Coach Hoppe assistant, so that's exciting. And then next Wednesday, gymnastics hosts its preview meet, and that's going to be a big moment for that program. That's a free event at Neville Arena, so be sure to attend that if you can't get to a gymnastics meet later this season. But Tiger Talk on Thursday. We'll talk it over with Coach Braba as well as basketball with Coach Pearl at Baumhauer's Victory Grill. So that's important to note. Tiger Talk back to Thursdays for basketball season.
Awesome, my man. Hey, we appreciate you and your time. Tell the people where they can find all that information that you just told them about.
Yep, follow me on Twitter at Jacob Hillman AU, as well as the Auburn Sports Network at AU Sports Network. All the broadcast details and everything with that will be posted there.
Thanks so much, Hillman. Appreciate your time, my man. Have a great week.
You as well. War Eagle.
That's Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network joining us every Monday right here on ESPN 106.7. We'll take our final break, come back, and wrap it up on the Monday edition of On the Line.
Hey, this is your resident Super Bowl champ, Chris Kenny from Unsportsmanlike, and you're listening to On the Line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Monday edition of On the Line here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Appreciate Jacob Hillman taking the time today to talk to us about a lot going on with Auburn football wrapping up. You've got the transfer portal. You have Auburn basketball, Auburn women's basketball, new soccer coach introduced today. So congratulations to that program. And been a great show today. So if you missed any of it, be sure that you go and listen back to the podcast version of the show. We just take the audio, put it on our station website for you at ESPNAU.com. We talked about all that and a lot more here on the show today. There are some big-time receivers that are in the transfer portal right now, Uncle T-Bone. One from Georgia Tech. There are some several others. Auburn's going to be hosting a tight end from Oklahoma. We will get into that more tomorrow with Christian Griffin, who is going to be in the studio in terms of the scheduled visits that Auburn has set up so far. Because, frankly, we've got to get all those in order. We got to figure out. I mean, there's so much information, it's hard to keep track. And I mean, things have happened since we've been on the air, literally. I mean, I was just reading through stuff during the break. I mean, things have literally happened in the 2 hours that we've been on the air. And so there's a lot going on. And again, it's a slower week in terms of college basketball just because of finals are a lot of these different programs. And so keep that in mind. But just to a look ahead to what the rest of the week holds. Christian will be in here tomorrow. We will talk with Jordan Hill on Wednesday with big news now that Carson Beck seems to be out for the foreseeable future for the Georgia Bulldogs. We'll also talk to Daryl Daffridge about this Auburn basketball team. A lot of transfer portal stuff then as well. And there's a lot to break down. What's your favorite matchup in the college football playoff round one? And I love the fact that these are on campus. Getting to host these games is such a big deal. What's your favorite round one matchup? You've got Tennessee going to Ohio State, going to Columbus. You've got Indiana, Notre Dame, the in-state game. How cool is that? It's going to be awesome to see that game be played out as well. Clemson, Texas.
Yeah.
SMU, Penn State.
Pure football, I think the Clemson-Texas game is just going to be a lot like the Clemson-SMU game. It's going to go down to the wire. I really feel that. Clemson is hot. Despite losing to South Carolina, they barely lost to them. That team has improved almost throughout the year. They've got a little confidence. And they run the ball and get a little physical. Since they played Georgia to open up the season, they've gotten tougher and tougher as a team, and they hung in there. And those are the type of dangerous teams that slip into any type of playoff situation or bracket, and all of a sudden they got just a wee bit of confidence, and they're going to give Texas problems.
Did anybody have Clemson making the playoff after they got waxed by Georgia week one?
No, not at all. And I'm going to say this, but cool storyline-wise, I think Indiana and Notre Dame's best story.
That is a really cool story.
Yeah. Tennessee and Ohio State. I don't think Tennessee's that great. You don't think Ohio State's that great. We both think that between the two of us that they're both of those teams are sort of overrated. And I wonder how SMU will fare going up into the great white north of Happy Valley, where it's probably going to be 2 degrees that day. And Penn State and James Franklin have a good football team, but can they win a big game? I mean, seriously. I mean, again, the pressure's on Penn State. Will they fold and Jabba? What's their version of Jabba? Paba? Will they Paba it up there?
Oh, man. You do have a chance at the Battle of the Ponies, the Battle of the Horses, with Boise State and SMU. If SMU wins, it would be the Battle of the Horses. So there you go. You got that, too. I've said this earlier, and I've just now looked it up. Tennessee and Ohio State have played one time. They played in the Citrus Bowl back in 1996. So this will be Tennessee's first ever trip to Columbus. And it's going to be late December, man. Think about this. You've got games in Ohio, Indiana, and Pennsylvania in late December. Ooh, got to be chilly.
Speaking of Ohio State real quick, Auburn owes them one in basketball. The Buckeyes are 1-0 against the Tigers. I forgot to mention this to Hillman. I remember this game, 1999. They bounced us from the Sweet 16, 72-64 at Scooney Penn and Michael Redd. I remember it like it was yesterday, and that was a really good Auburn basketball team.
We'll talk more about that as the week goes on. I'm back tomorrow, 2-4, right here on ESPN. Until then, stay safe. I'll talk to you later.